What is good, everybody? Welcome to another 49ers Gold Standard podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera alongside Vish Kumaran. It is Monday, even though we're recording this, full disclosure, on Saturday. You're going to see it on Monday. In fact, we just had Brandon Ayuk post another stupid thing on social media, which we're going to talk about, Vish. But before all that, training camp has started. The rookies have reported. The vets report this week. It's here.
I know. It's almost real. Like, we got through it. The doldrums of July, the worst part of football season. Although I have to say, Brandon Ayuk kept us going this July. He really kept July just moving forward week that after week, true. Giving us something new.
We will get to the Brandon Ayuk stuff, but we want to start with positive stuff, stuff that actually affects the 49ers, especially now that camp is here. Adam Schefter's tweeting out pictures of Daizon Stribling, and every time I'm like, yes, give it to me. So I want to keep the positivity rolling here, Vish. What is the storyline that you are most excited to watch play out now that camp is actually here?
I want to see the defensive backs under Raheem Morris. I think that the Niners made targeted changes in their defensive back coaching staff, and then Raheem Morris specializes as a DB coach. And I think both of those things happen independently, but I think they're going to yield a result that we're going to see in concert. The Niners have drafted a lot of young defensive backs over the last 2 to 3 years. And in some ways, you could be unhappy with the talent of some of the defensive backs they've drafted. And then in other ways, you could be unhappy with the development of the defensive backs they've drafted. I take a Jair Brown, for example, who's not been my most favorite player through the years of watching him on the 49ers. I've criticized him a little bit on this show and such. I think Jair Brown is an NFL talented player. Like, I think he's talented enough, especially in this scheme when they play quarters so much of the time. I think he's very much talented enough to be a starting safety in the NFL. He didn't improve for 3 years. Is that a coaching thing? Is that a Brown thing? And those are the things I'm trying to find out. And so I want to see how these DBs ascend. I like Upton Stout a lot. I think Upton Stout is everybody's pick for breakout candidate. And so I want to see if he makes that ascension. I think Renardo Green is the most talented corner on the 49ers. I want to see how he does with a different coaching staff, especially given that he was all over the trade market rumors early this offseason, and there were questions on his longevity with the 49ers. Jack Jones is a really talented player. He could start for sure. I want to see how he does competing in this camp. I want to see if Diamador Lenore bounces back. So there's a lot for me to see. Malik Mustafa, a year after the ACL, I didn't think he played so well last year. So let's see what he does. And that, for me, is going to be the thing I'm going to monitor the most in training camp. And I think that's going to make or break this defense from either being a top 10-ish unit because of their front seven or just a dominant top five, like one of the best defenses in the NFL, and you win because of that.
Well, you said last year you thought if everyone was healthy, the Niners would have had a top five defense in the league. So I assume you would say the same thing this year?
Yes, but it's different. I think the scheme that they played last year, if they are making the comprehensive changes to be more Raheem Morris's style, at least what he's been doing the past few years in Atlanta and LA, it's less conducive to having just a statistical top five defense, if that makes sense. Like, the way Robert Saleh plays, because they don't give up big plays, by the end of the year, if you get a bunch of reps for a guy like Renardo Green and Upton Stout and they start playing super fast and you have Bosa in front of them creating havoc, you will most likely have a top 10 defense. Like, that scheme, when they stay healthy and you rush the passer and you get chemistry in the back end, you end up having a top 10, top five defense. It's really consistent. The problem is you become really predictable over time. And then in a playoff game, when a quarterback who's really, really good is getting possession after possession, he starts finally getting comfortable being able to stand in against the rush and make throws. And that's the Brady Mahomes effect. We've seen it in the Super Bowl. I think this scheme isn't, I think it's a little more variable, because Morris takes a couple more chances and he takes more risks to create pass rush one-on-ones. And so it's different to me in the sense that I think that they'll give up more big plays and more opportunities for the other team to score in the regular season. but they'll be tighter when it's third and eight and they need to come up with something to get a stop. And that doesn't mean Robert Saleh wasn't creative. It just means that when you study their film over time, you're going to get less indications of what they would do on that third and eight or how they're going to try to attack you from a defensive standpoint on that third and eight. And so that's the difference. I think that could mean a top five defense in the playoffs. I just don't know if the statistics will play out the same way, because I think there is a schematic difference in how they ran their defense last year to this year. But okay. I stand by that from a talent perspective, and they've only gotten better when you throw the Osas and into the mix, who's better than any interior defensive player they had last year.
Yes, but Jordan Elliott had 16 pressures at defensive tackle for the Niners last year. That led the defensive tackles for the Niners last year. 16. The Seahawks had three defensive tackles that had more than that. In fact, Osa Odighizuwa had more pressures than every defensive tackle on the 49ers combined last year, which is crazy, but it is true. Your point about the coaching staff, though, is a good one, because people just think, oh, Raheem Morris, and that's it. But that's not true. Jerry Gray is now the defensive game passing coordinator. He was in Atlanta last year. And Ray Brown is now the defensive backs coach. He comes over from Boston College, so he's in his first year with the 49ers.
He was in Tampa for a long time with those guys.
So, yeah, it really is a revised defensive secondary coaching staff, really. And good, because like you pinpointed, there have been a lot of frustrations with this 49ers secondary from everything, from how they play the ball, just every possible angle. It's been frustrating.
And Morris has been great with young defensive backs everywhere he's been. Last year, they had that safety from Notre Dame, Armani Watts, who's maybe the best rookie safety in the league in Atlanta. Morris drafted him. They've had a few other young guys in Atlanta over the course of his time. My memory about these things isn't as sharp as it once was. A drop, it'll get you. In L.A., they had Jordan Fuller from Ohio State, who played quite well for them with Morris. He really developed John Johnson, and John Johnson got a big contract. He was a good player. The corner that they have starting right now, who got a contract, he came back. He starts on the other side. He's not going to start anymore. I'm blanking on the name. The one that got picked on in the playoffs by JSN.
Chase Lucas?
No, for the Rams.
Oh, I don't know.
They had whoever started in the playoffs. Not Quinn Lake also developed a little bit with Raheem Morris, but they had one more guy. I'm so sad about blanking on this name, but he is another guy who developed, got a contract. And so that's where I want to see what he does with the 49ers DBs.
This was an angle that I was not expecting you to take, but I'm glad that you did, because there's a lot of meat on those bones. And I remember going into the past couple seasons where Levin would say, you know, if Diamandouro Lenore gets hurt, we're screwed, because there was nothing behind him in the secondary. But I actually like Jack Jones, seems like a solid player. I feel like the Niners corners, you know, they're not scraping the bottom of the barrel there. I would feel like they might be able to hold up a little better if one of those guys, you know, Green or Lenore, did go down.
Well, I take it a step further with Jack Jones. To me, Jack Jones isn't just a solid player. I don't know if he's been the same since he's gotten hurt, and that's the thing I'm trying to see. But in a scheme like this, if Jack Jones buys in and you have what, because I don't fully know what Jack Jones's whole character situation is, but that's always been the question mark with him. If he buys in, we might sit next year and say, wow, the Niners had a really good starting corner and Jack Jones was the best corner in the league. Or on the team, on the team. Like, we look at it and we were like, wow, they got him for nothing and he was the best. That's the kind of situation they have set up. And I love that competition, because you're absolutely right. They didn't have a situation where he was the fourth corner. And that was the thing we talked about early in the offseason, where they've added veteran depth and this was what they didn't want to pay for last year. And so instead of having Darrell Luter compete with Jack Jones, who's a true veteran and a league player, Darrell Luter is competing against undrafted free agents to make the roster. And so he's making the roster for sure. That's where the Niners are going to be a lot better this year. A lot more veteran depth.
People don't realize how much, if you have a glaring weakness, especially in the playoffs, it gets exploited to no end. They will attack it. They will just absolutely press until it hurts. And so a huge part of your team is obviously health is first and foremost, but also do you have the depth there to avoid just glaring weaknesses? Because if you got them, teams are going to find them. Every round you go forward in the playoffs, the scouting intensifies to, like, I don't think people realize how much more goes into those games. So look, if the 49ers can avoid that in the secondary, at least at the cornerback position, we know at the safety position, it's dicey. But I actually had said, Vish, the narrative for the Niners that I don't believe is going to come true is I don't know how much help Raheem Morris can be. I think he could take good players and make them great. Can you take bad players and make them good? I don't know that any coach can do that.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much as good or bad sometimes. And by the way, it just came to me. The guy I was thinking of was Darius Williams. I don't think he's on the Rams this year. Anyway, I don't think it's about bad and good as much as it's a communication style. Like, because I don't look at Renardo Green, for example, as a bad player.
No,
I don't. I actually think of him as a good player. But to get him to play the way the Niners want him to play, maybe he just needs to be communicated to different. Maybe Raheem Morris will get him to buy into how he needs to play. Because a lot of the NFL, and I think this is where it's really hard for players to come from college. In college, you do have a there's a talent discrepancy between the 5-star recruits and the 3-star recruits. There's a size difference, a weight difference, yes, a speed difference. And so a certain way. Renardo Green gets to play he's the one guy that can prep Malik Nabers and maybe have a chance getting off the line of scrimmage and running with him. That Florida State probably has zero corners that need to do that. And so they need to play, have everybody else play a certain way. But in the NFL, every corner in the NFL is running 4-4. You know, like every corner, there's not a discrepancy where like every striving to be the best of the best for the most part and lifting and doing all the things to be the best in their craft. And so much of the game is about how do you get 11 people to buy in to play a certain way together. You're not necessarily featuring one guy that much more than the other. There are exceptions. Like for the Niners defense, they feature Fred Warner. He's got their unique skill set and they feature that. But he's the one guy they feature. Everybody else in the NFL has to play a role. And so, like, how do you communicate to a person that you need to play this role, even if that's not the role you've played your whole life, or that's not the role you played in college, or maybe that's not even the role you were told you were going to play when you're drafted? And I think there's a sense of leadership that needs to be there to get a guy to buy in. And I'm not saying it wasn't there before, but maybe it needed to be different. Because I look at the same way for Brown. I look at the same way for Mustafa, too. In this scheme, I'm not the biggest fan of Brown and Mustafa in the sense of let me rephrase that. I'm not the biggest fan of Brown and Mustafa. I don't think in Brown and Mustafa, you had to pick safeties in the NFL. Those two guys are in the top 15, 20 players in terms of skill set you're picking. But in this scheme, for what they ask safeties to do, I think Brown and Mustafa can be a good starting tandem. I really do. If you can get them both to play without hesitation and you can teach Brown how to see better angles to the ball and play with more confidence when the ball's in the air, I don't know. And 50% of that is if they rush better in front of them and these guys get stops, they'll get false confidence, right? That's when Akello Witherspoon is putting his hands up when the quarterback overthrows the receiver, like that false confidence, like that's 50% of it. And then the other 50% is like Brown and Mustafa at their best actually play the way these safeties are supposed to play in the sense that they play with no hesitation and they come down and hit. That's why Brown gets to keep recirculating himself into the starting lineup, because when he comes down and hits, he arrives with force. He doesn't hesitate. He comes down. Same with Mustafa. It just doesn't happen consistently. Maybe they're not good enough, Rob, but I don't think it's a case of they're not good enough. I think it's a case of you just need to build their confidence a little bit. And maybe that's what was ongoing, because they've drafted way too many young players in the secondary for them to have so many of them kind of have the same career path that Brown has gone through, which is that we see that they're not like complete bums in the sense that they're not lacking. They belong on the NFL field, but they're not improving in refining their game and becoming more comfortable in being an NFL player and starter. And so maybe that was a coaching thing. I don't know.
Well, they need to improve their tackling. They may hit with force, but Pinnock, Mustafa, and Brown all had missed tackle rates of 15.8% or higher. So,
but that might just be a confidence thing when you're coming down in space, right? Like, oh, am I close enough to him? Should I dive now? Like, some of that is just a mindset thing. Because if you hesitate that one step in college, you can't hesitate. Like, you might be athletic enough to compensate. In the NFL, running backs are going to make you look funny.
Yeah, maybe it is. But whatever it is, it's got to get fixed. I don't care why you miss the tackle. I just know when the guy's running past you down the field. When you're a safety, you can't miss that many tackles. You're the safety. You're the last line of defense.
Sure, but I think the nuance I'm trying to draw is, like, you're right. Whatever the reason is doesn't matter. It is what the product has been on the field. For a guy like Brown, the nuance to me is that even if he's not my favorite player, I think he has the capability to do that. I don't think it's a lack of capability that's been the product on the field. I think it's a combination of he's not been confident, he doesn't fully understand what he's seeing, and it's been inconsistent. And I think those are, like, some of the hardest things for anybody to overcome in life. And sometimes I question if that's a guidance thing, Rob, or if that's a person-to-person thing.
It's entirely possible. Coaching, there's no sport where coaching matters more than football. So, and we know the Niners got a good one. We'll see if it can translate. In terms of my training camp story, I'm looking forward to the most. For me, it's the wide receivers. It's number one, Ricky Pearsall. Hopefully he is back healthy. But number two, I think it's the spot where they have the most competition. You've got Christian Kirk there. Great. Your top draft pick is wide receiver Daizon Stribling. Then you got a guy like Jacob Cowing, who comes into training camp last year. Kyle Shanahan said nobody had a better OTAs than Jacob Cowing. Nobody improved more, and nobody came ready to work more than Jacob Cowing. And then the first day of training camp, he pulls his hamstring running on air, and he literally gets derailed after that, so we never got to see him. They still have DeMarcus Robinson. They have Jordan Watkins and all that too. But I say Evans won, Pearsall too, and let the best man win after that, and let them all battle it out. And no matter who's going to be in there in the preseason, there's going to be something to watch at wide receiver for the Niners.
Yeah, I like this one. This is a good one. I don't think I was really thinking of this one off the top of my head, but you're right. It's one of the better roster battles at the end of the roster, because there's a lot more layers to this than just who is the best receiver in terms of winning one-on-one battles on the outside when you're talking about building a receiving core, right? Because when you're talking about building a receiving core and you need six guys, that are going to fit the 53. In this case, one of those receivers has to become the punt returner. So who's going to win that battle and then show that they're also good enough at receiver to essentially take one of those spots of, I would say, three spots behind Stribling, Pearsall, and Evans? Maybe three if they keep six receivers, maybe two if they keep five. And then the second one is special teams, right? Maybe Malik Turner retains his role as the practice squad call-up to be one of their key special teams guys. But if that's not the case, then one of these other guys can maybe come in and steal a spot just by being a better receiver than Malik Turner, who we know is not very good at that, and maybe contributing in special teams the way he does, because he's made a 8-year NFL career out of contributing in special teams. And so that's where I think this receiver battle is really interesting to watch at the end of the roster. And then we know how much blocking is important to this particular battle. And it feels like the Niners have made a point this offseason to point out that they did not block well on the perimeters of the of their offense, which is specifically their receivers. And I think that's been their biggest issue running the football against Seattle. I don't think they feel like they're going to be able to block Leonard Williams or Byron Murphy any better. I think they feel like when they stretch it out outside, the guys like Witherspoon and Julian Love and Eamon Wari and Ernest Jones, the guys that are flying in the second level of their defense, are essentially just beating blocks and making tackles in the open field. And the Niners' best path to success has always been getting their skill players in the open field because they are hard to tackle. And so that's where, to me, blocking is going to be a big factor in who ends up getting one of these spots. They drafted Stribling partially because of that. And so I'm totally with you. It's going to be fascinating to find out. And I think you're right. You got to let it play out. And I'm interested to see what Shanahan ends up valuing and pursuing. Does he look for the most well-rounded receiving core? Does he look for the six best players? Does he choose to stick with veterans because he needs them to do multiple things over the course of the season? And the guy like Kirk has inside-outside versatility. Does he bet on a guy like Watkins or Cowing to play a big role? It's going to be really fun to find out. And then it's going to be really fun to see who's ascended, like who's put in that work in the offseason and become confident to take on that sort of responsibility, because it's available for the Niners.
The stat I keep saying is that the Niners running backs were 24th in rush yards before contact at 1.14. That is not purely an offensive line stat. Some of that is edge guys, the wide receivers out there that are whiffing on their blocks and letting people come in the backfield unblocked, either forcing McCaffrey to have to break a tackle or forcing him to move and run into a, you know, another defender somewhere else. The perimeter blocking has to be better. It just has to be better. I just hope that Kyle doesn't just defer to Kirk and DeMarcus Robinson just because they're veteran guys. Like, yeah, somebody might get hurt and then you might have to, you know, train somebody up at a new spot. Or you know what? You can sign DeMarcus Robinson off the street anytime. There's a bunch of DeMarcus Robinsons out there. I swear to God, there really is. Like, you need like the Eric Kendricks of wide receivers. Sure, sure. You know, like,
It's weird because I when I hear you do this, I always think of a point that you make to me, which is that like a known quantity is better than an unknown quantity, right? And you say that when it comes to draft picks. Like, I'd trade my draft picks to go get somebody that I already know is good. Like, why find out with the draft pick? How do we know Jordan Watkins or Jacob Cowing is a DeMarcus Robinson in the first place? And that's like a question I feel like we don't talk about enough, because to us, DeMarcus Robinson, and the lens we do it from, fans or analysts or whatever you want to call talking about the sport, is he's the fourth receiver on the 49ers, or he's the fifth receiver on the 49ers. But initial role in the NFL for a team to want you for 10 years, and McVay to have you, and Andy Reid to have you, and Kyle Shanahan to have you, and see value in you as a backup receiver, Jacob Cowing might not be able to do that. In fact, Jacob Cowing's career might be,
yeah,
just this and done. Same with Jordan Watkins. And that's a question I always ask. Maybe it's not just you. It just comes across to me as you're making this point. But like, what makes you confident that they are keeping DeMarcus Robinson because he's just a veteran? Like, we might think DeMarcus Robinson is not very good, but that not very good might just be better than Jacob Cowing will ever be, better than Jordan Watkins will ever be.
That's a totally fair point. And that's why I'm excited to watch them. I want to see them play, you know? And, you know, I know Shanahan always talks about how he values practice more than games. It's different, man. Games are different. Even in the preseason, games are different than practice. So I want to see these guys out there on the field, you know? Like, Jacob Cowing had that one catch against the Chiefs. Remember that deep ball against the Chiefs? And we were like, yeah, all right, Jacob Cowing. Like, I want to see this guy play. I want to see him out there. I got to see DeMarcus Robinson all last year. He had one good game against the Colts. That was it. And then he had a big catch against the Eagles. Actually, I think the playoff game against the Eagles, he had a good game too, to be fair to him.
He had a touchdown.
And he had like the first play of the game, he caught like a 60-yard pass or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But like, I've seen him. So now I want to see the other guys, and then I want to compare, and I'll make my own judgment. But that's part of the reason why I'm so excited to see this position this preseason.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
I think two points I wanted to touch on. One that you made that I wanted to highlight, because I think it's really good, and I think we should all be more conscious about it when we're talking about the team, is I think too much when we talk about football, we isolate responsibility, right? You were talking about the run game thing, and you were talking about how we isolate responsibility to the offensive line. Like, running backs, run game. Offensive line, run game. Offensive line, blocking. And really, it's all-encompassing, right? Like, run game is a full team responsibility. That's the whole thing Shanahan tries to buy. And it's how the quarterback carries out the fake. It's how the receivers block. It's everybody needs to do a job so we can run the football. Similarly, pass game is the same thing, right? Like, the offensive line needs to block a certain way. The quarterback needs to feel the right spaces in the pocket, needs to feel the right timing for the coverage and get the ball in a certain cadence to the receiver. Like, it's all encompassing. And I feel like sometimes we do just attribute individual responsibilities as part of a team, because it's easier to organize roles that way, when sometimes there is a nuance of team is not running the football well, it just doesn't mean that they have a bad offensive line, for example. It's much more than just that. And I think the second part, and dang it, I kind of lost my train of thought for where I was going. Can you remind me where we were right before this? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, sorry. I remember. So when we're watching that, I think it's a little complicated because sometimes the roles that they get to play in preseason are not actually the roles that they're trying to compete to make the roster for. In preseason, sometimes in fourth quarters, I'm picking him as an example. This isn't exactly how it goes. Might get to be the X receiver and the Niners throw three fade routes, right? And Jordan Watkins catches three fade routes against some fourth string corner, and he has three catches for 115 yards and three touchdowns. Let's just say that's a little extreme, but let's just say he has three catches, 50 yards and a touchdown. Good game, yep. Good stats. And this all happens in the fourth quarter, right? For us, I think the conversation then immediately turns to Watkins. We know he's good. I've never seen DeMarcus Robinson do that in a game. Or Kyle Shanahan is then going to, hey, let's run three fades to Jordan Watkins, see what he can do in that spot, right? And so that's where it's like sometimes we see them do something, but that's not the role that they're really trying. They're going to throw three fades to in that spot is Mike Evans. And if they don't throw it to Mike Evans, it's going to go to George Kittle next. And if it doesn't go to George Kittle, it's going to go to Christian McCaffrey next. And then Pearsall. There's eight guys that are going to play that role for the 49ers. So sometimes you're looking at, well, how do these guys complement the role of the guys I already have? And that's the part of it I also think that we have to sometimes look at in preseason, because sometimes Cowing might be better as an X receiver than DeMarcus Robinson. For example, it's not an exact thing, but this might just be the case. But if the role that the Niners have available is we need a guy who can be the backup at Z and the backup in the slot and also do these eight things in these run games, and maybe that's not as visually available to us in a preseason game, but Cowing really sucks at that, they're going to keep Robinson. And that's the other part of it that's hard for us to analyze. And that's the part of it that I think they say, yeah, we care about practice. Because in practice, they get to put these guys in the role that they envision their roster playing out. You're not just getting to play your seven most talented guys. This is the Chris Ballard roster building philosophy. Every draft, you end up with the 10 most talented guys in the draft. But when I'm building a team, I don't just need guys who can play the role of the star receiver. I need the Malik Turner type who's going to be my fifth receiver and play special teams. When I'm building a team, I need a fourth linebacker who's just going to run down in special teams like a madman. Like, there's certain roles on this team that you don't even account for when you're drafting that you need to fill in order to have a winning football team.
That is a very good point, and it's a very good explanation maybe for some of the 49ers thinking, and I really am going to try to keep that in mind as we go along, because I think it's totally fair. Also, though, it's, and this is why roster decisions are so difficult, right? It's one thing to say, well, this guy's better at X, but he's worse at the role that we're going to need. Well, your roles change throughout the season because guys get hurt, and then, but it's impossible to know what's going to happen. So it's a very, very difficult job for sure. But I like that you said that, because I'm going to really keep that in mind this preseason. You almost have to watch more for, like, all right, how natural are this guy's hands? You know, what does his speed look like? How does he have good contact balance? You almost have to watch it as if you're scouting the draft, because the actual results of the play necessarily aren't indicative of what they're going to be asked to do later on.
Totally. Like, that's in college too. It's the same thing when you're watching college football players, right? Because in college, everybody kind of gets to be the star of their college football team in a way if they're going to the draft. But the problem is in the NFL, like, one guy gets to get the offense built around him. And that guy is usually Jerry Rice, for example, right? He's going to the Hall of Fame. And so if you're not that guy, you essentially have to find a way to play a role in a system. That's for everybody. It's the constant conversation in the NBA, right? Like, the NBA has completely eradicated guys who have incredible one-on-one games, who don't really play with others, where you kind of get them the ball and they kind of feel to a spot and they find a shot and they make it. Like, that sort of player is gone, because everything in the NBA is a little more coordinated on how we organize ourselves to get high percentage shots. The NFL has always been that in terms of a system. You need guys to fit a specific role and play that role really, really well. it's rare that you get to be Malik Nabers, and you're so talented that the offense will be built around you from day one.
Hopefully the Niners will have receivers that could fit all kinds of roles this season, and we won't be rolling out some of the people that we saw last year. Sorry, Kendrick Bourne, I'm talking about you.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm interested to see who the punt returner is, because I thought the whole special teams thing last year was really underrated, that it got good with Pinheiro, and they lost Sky Moore out of nowhere became a really good player for the 49ers last year. And they won some games because Sky Moore out of nowhere became really impactful. I'm hoping that there's someone that steps up in a special teams parliament too for the Niners, because they just need more dynamic players with the ball in their hands. And I don't know, outside of Stribling, if they've really added that this offseason of all the things they've added.
Well, and like you said, you know, supposedly they drafted Junior Bergen, right, to be the returner. But if you have no value as a receiver and no value on special teams, you're not making the team as a kick returner. You're just not going to. So now you're looking at maybe Watkins.
You think he changes that a little bit? Because that was Shanahan's original philosophy, right? He was adamant about it. I think Jeremy Curley, who they gave an extension to in 2017, and then Trent Taylor beat out and they cut Jeremy Curley. I think then he gave that explanation saying that, like, you got to make the team as a receiver first and then you return punts. I wonder if he's evolved, because there was a value they found in that last year.
It helped them, especially with all the injuries they had on offense. Not having to drive down the field as far was very important. By the way, I'm just going to say, Trent Taylor ain't walking through that door. But
is he there? That. He's got to be on the practice squad, right? The guys probably need him around to help the training camp go well.
He retired.
Oh, really?
Yeah, finally.
Oh, shoot. I hope he's still around. Who are they going to golf with?
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to the Brandon Ayuk situation.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Vish, we can't have an episode without talking about something Brandon Ayuk said. And on Saturday, he took to social media again. He posted, quote, "They was like, BA, we're taking $30 million out of your contract." I was like, okay. NFLPA was like, "Do you want to appeal it and try to get it back?" I was like, nah, I'm just going to go to DC. They was like, okay, we're going to start a smear campaign to try and tarnish your name, image, and likeness. I was like, okay, that's going to make me sad, but I'm still going to go to DC. And the NFL was like, and then they put the zipped up smile emoji, zipped up mouth emoji. And once again, Vish, I mean, this is Brandon Ayuk living in his own reality to me. First of all, he starts with, out of the blue, "We're taking $30 million out of your contract," as if that was the beginning of the story, which it clearly was not. It clearly goes back to him not giving the 49ers the rehab updates that they want. And then he admits that he was advised to fight them taking the money, and he just said no. And it's like, there's no smear campaign against you, Brandon Ayuk. Every single thing that's happened is your own social media. It's your own doing. It's your own decisions coming back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah, I wanted to defend parts of what Brandon Ayuk has done, because I think there's a part of me that likes to think that there's some balanced sensibility. Like, I don't like the idea of someone just calling Brandon Ayuk crazy, because I didn't think Brandon Ayuk was crazy when I saw him on the 49ers. And frankly, like, the player I observed always had heart. He was a competitor. He did the little things like block. Like, he was all about the team. Like, I never wanted to try and change that narrative because things have gotten ugly in this situation. But even reading this, it's hard to be a defender or someone that thinks Brandon Ayuk is making sense in any sense of the capacity. The NFLPA did their job, from what it sounds like. They asked him if he wanted to appeal it and get it back, and he said no. Who cares if they're going to do a smear campaign on your name, image, and likeness? Like you said, you're going to still go to DC. How are you going to go there? That's what the NFLPA was also trying to find out. That's why they were going to try to help you get your money back. I don't understand why you said, no, I'm still going to DC. That entire statement is why people fundamentally have decided they think you're crazy.
but also it's not a smear campaign, BA. The calls are coming from inside the house. You're the one smearing you. All the damage done to your reputation is based on your actions and your social media posts. No one out there is saying Brandon Ayuk is terrible. Like, who has smeared you in any way? The only thing, if you want to call it a smear, you could say, well, the 49ers claimed I didn't do my rehab stuff. If you want to claim that's a smear, I could understand why he would say that. But other than that, all the crap he's taken is because people respond to these posts and point out the mistakes that he's made and say, you cost yourself $30 million. You're endangering your situation with the Commanders. You're calling out the Commanders quarterback on social media, telling him he hides behind his mom. Nobody did that to you. You did that to you. So again, he's living in his own reality. And now even TJ Houshmandzadeh, his at one time wide receiver coach, is saying there's zero chance he ever plays again. You, Brandon Ayuk, have alienated everybody. Isn't it weird that you have no allies? There has been no 49er teammate saying Brandon Ayuk is getting screwed. There's been no other wide receiver in the NFL that's saying Brandon Ayuk is getting screwed. Nobody from the Commanders has said Brandon Ayuk is getting screwed. Aren't the crickets the indication that it's you? Hi, you're the problem. It's you, Brandon.
No, for sure. I also just don't understand this thing to go to the Commanders. I think I said it like the last time we talked about this on this show, which is like, I don't get why Jaden Daniels is like, has been put in this position to be like his saving grace. And then Daniels responded and essentially like said he's not, you know, involved. But like, yeah, that part of it, I don't get either. Like, there is no friend in life that I would, dude, you gave up $30 million to come be with me? Like, what? What's wrong with you?
And then, God, the second you don't have, like, a good game, is Brandon Ayuk can be like, dude, I gave up $30 million. You got to throw me the ball. Like, the whole thing is weird. It's ridiculous. And like I said at the top of the show, we're taping this on Saturday. So by all we know, by the time this comes out on Monday, Brandon Ayuk could have two more social media posts. He could be on the Commanders. Who the hell knows? But the information we have right now.
The irony is, though, Rob.
What?
He keeps saying the money is not important. All he wants to do is play football, but it looks like the money is going to be all he's going to have.
And that's why I talked about it a little while ago. Like, even for the greatest of the great, the cheers go away, the attention goes away, the accolades go away, and it's just you. And you're left with a broken body and hopefully a bank account. And no matter what Brandon Ayuk does, the rest of his career, he's going to have $30 million less than mm-hmm. he would have, could have, should have had.
And I wonder if he'll regret that when.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not? How could you not? But that's the world.
I ask, how could you not appeal it?
That's the craziest thing, because he claims he has all this documentation and evidence that he kept the 49ers up to date. So it's a pretty simple thing. If you've got that, the 49ers can't say, well, you didn't keep us up to date on your rehab, because you can send them the information. You could show them the emails or the texts that you sent to the team with updates on your progress. Like, it's a pretty, you know how hard it is to get a contract voided? It's super hard. It's
why it doesn't happen, right?
Yes, because the Players Association didn't want the owners to be able to just void every bad contract they ever had left and right. And that's how it should be, by the way. It should be very difficult to void a contract.
And by the way, there's an element of this of like, yeah, that's why also players have agents, because yes, they do take the 2%, but players sometimes aren't organized enough to be able to send the text for the rehab update. So the agent takes care of it, making sure this stuff is there. So the agent gets the money and the player gets the money. That's why they don't lose their money. That's why they rehab every year and don't lose their money.
Yeah, let's be honest. There's no reason a football player should be able to do all that stuff. You're a football player. You're not an agent. That's the totally different job. And you want someone that knows the ins and outs of that stuff that can fight for you. And you chose to give all that up, Brandon Ayuk. So congratulations, but it's not a smear campaign against you. You are not a victim. You are the perpetrator. It's you. And he just doesn't seem to want to acknowledge that. And until he does, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, at this point, I'll say, I don't know how many more times we're going to have to talk about Brandon Ayuk. I generally just feel bad talking about it at this point. It sucks. I feel bad that his career played out this way. I but also I think it's done. We're like, nothing's going to happen anymore. I think the Brandon Ayuk story is going to end. He's not going to play in the NFL again. That's what I was pretty confident is where we were trending a while back, and I feel like we're kind of confirmed there. And yeah, I think I'm more or less done, if you will, talking about Brandon Ayuk, but also I think the topic itself is done. I think he's talked his last words of relevance. Like, training camp is going to start and he won't be part of a football team this year. And this is the last offseason. Him saying something and wanting to be a part of a football team will matter to anyone.
Exactly. They'll be the veterans will report on Saturday. And I certainly am going to be talking about what's going on with the team, not what's talking about Brandon Ayuk. They'll get asked if I already gave the Niners their media strategy. Hopefully they saw it. You just say he's not on the active roster. We're focused on the guys that are here. And we're trying to win a Super Bowl. And you just repeat that over and over again, and they won't ask after a day, and it'll be fine, and the NFL world will move on without Brandon Ayuk. Somehow, we will be able
to... The grit. No one's going to ask anyway.
Somebody should ask, but it'll be over after a day. Anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you, everybody, again. Thank you to all our YouTube channel members, the Golden Ticket members. Thank you so much. Couldn't put you on the scroll because there's just too many of you, but we greatly, greatly appreciate each and every one of you. I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate your contributions. I know money is tight for everybody, so the fact that you have signed up for that, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Vish, thanks to you for being willing to record on a day that's not your normal day. I really appreciate that. Enjoy your weekend, or just now it won't be a weekend, it'll be a Monday. Enjoy your Monday. Enjoy training camp as it starts up in earnest this weekend. And we'll talk soon.